This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
That was an intense clap, Katie.
That was wild.
It like reverberated in the room.
Yeah. Super busy, finals time, many assignments, procrastination. For anyone who cares, I have finally taken the lead in the reading competition. 35 fucking books this year. Come at me, bitches.
So many books.
I'm so competitive.
I'm proud of you.
I love reading. I'm really proud of myself too. I'm like so grateful to Andy for like doing this competition. Actually, I need to message her. She just started reading a book that's so fucking good.
Ooh.
It's called None of This Is True.
Okay.
The main character that you're following had like a traumatic event in her past that's like coming back to bite her in the butt. Ooh. She like at the same time of like meeting a new friend who's like a journalist, sort of unreliable narrators, potentially don't know who you can trust, mystery. It's so good.
Ooh.
It is so
good. It sounds really good. I love a mystery. I love when things from the past come back to bite you in the butt.
Mm-hmm. Same, big fan. I'm bigger fan if it's intergenerational.
Ooh, yes.
Like something that like your great grandpa did coming back to bite you in the butt. Yes, please. That sounds awesome.
Yes, feed me the intergenerational drama.
If you're looking for any crime, murder, mystery, murder that I've been told is too dark and too much and what the fuck, come let me know because I have it all.
I have it all. Come look at my wares.
Come listen to my suggestions. Apparently, Karen Slaughter, the author of the Will Trent books, is not for everyone, which I understand. I want my books like so dark. I want it to like fuck me up. I'm chasing a high of the first time I read the third Game of Thrones book.
Ooh, okay. I've never read any of them.
I'm so jealous.
Hasn't he not written the last one?
No, there's supposed to be like three fucking more. I can't even begin to talk about how George R. R. Martin is literally doing anything that isn't writing these goddamn books. I saw a picture of him, this old man who's like health isn't great, who like walks with a fucking cane in one of those inflatable balls, you know?
Stop.
When I say he's literally doing everything other than writing, I truly mean everything. He opened up this like interactive, amazing fucking art museum in the town that he lives. He has like a movie theater where he like does stuff. He's like doing all these shows and shit. He's doing so everything other than writing these fucking books.
Wow.
But that does not change what is the masterpiece of the third book. Mm. I mean, of all five of the books, honestly. But the third book broke me in a way that a book has never broken me before. I threw it across the room and I've been chasing that high ever since.
Oh my God. Have you found anything that has like come close to touching it?
Nothing that's coming to mind.
Mm.
So no.
Damn.
I know. So that's how I am, Ashley. How are you?
I'm okay. Last weekend, I went into the city to see Fortune Feimster at the Beacon Theater, which was amazing.
So jealous.
She is so fucking funny. We were eighth row and Amanda and I were on the aisle seat. So Amanda was there and then I was just it was the best. So I was like, hey, I'm going to lean towards you. She was so fucking funny, dude. And she told a lot of jokes that had to do with like her family, like her mom, and they were hilarious. The opener, who we only got to see a little bit of because we did get there a little bit late, we didn't hit like too much traffic on the way in, but like it's still getting into the city, and Lauren and Helen's engagement party was earlier that day, so we could have left earlier, but
yeah.
But we got there like halfway through his set. The opener was Matteo Lane.
Stop it.
Yes, I was like, oh my God, I follow you on TikTok. I didn't know that he was the opener. I didn't like look it up beforehand and Helen had the tickets. And I was like, oh my fucking God. And I was like kind of mad that we got there late, but at least we saw a few of his jokes.
God. Yeah.
Oh my God, I got so excited when I saw him.
This is why you always Google, because then the one time that you don't, the one time that you're not prepared, you fucking miss half of Mateo Lane's set and you're like, damn it.
Like, what the fuck?
Fuck. Oh, like, my the God. One time I was just like chill and lax about it.
Right. The one time I didn't like invest into like looking into this when somebody else bought me the tickets. I was just like, oh, hell yeah. Fortune Themester. Yes. Ready.
Because I don't want anyone to like write in and be like, oh my God, like, why didn't you look? Ashley normally does. This is, and she's been working on trying to like, you know, go with the flow a little bit more. And then the world fucking does something like this.
And like, to be honest, I've been very preoccupied.
Yeah. No, it's it's beyond understandable. I just know that like the next time something happens and you're like over planning, you're going to be the last time that I didn't do this.
Like, oh my God.
You world. I'm glad you saw half of it though. It's still right. Amazing.
Yeah. And Fortune was incredible. And then we went to Cubbyhole, but I feel like I want to go back to Cubbyhole on like a weeknight, like maybe a Wednesday or a Thursday, because it was genuinely just like so overly crowded that me with my anxiety was very uncomfortable, but I was absolutely obsessed with the vibe of the place. I love a place that just has like tchotchkes and like shit hanging from the ceiling everywhere. Yeah. Like, I love it. I'm so into it. Maximalism that like I was standing there like waiting for Helen to like order our drinks, and I was just staring up at the ceiling like, this is amazing. But I feel like if I really want to like get the most out of my experience there, I want to go on like a weeknight instead of a Saturday night at like 11 o'clock. Yeah. It was just overwhelming, but I loved the vibe. It was very cute.
Super cute. I mean, it's called Cubbyhole for a reason.
Yeah, it's very small.
Small package, a massive personality in a very small package.
I'm looking forward to going back again. So just on a weekday when my 33-year-old self can handle it a little bit more.
That's fair. I honestly don't know if it's ever like casual. Someone who goes there all the time, please let us know. I know of like many spots where it's like when you don't have a lot of options, it is jam-packed.
Yeah.
All the time.
But it was cool. And I had the bouncer outside was very nice. I like have so many cards in my tiny wallet. You'd think that the wallet being tiny would help, but there were so many cards in there and I'm just like trying to find my license, and I was like, I'm so sorry, I always have so much shit in here. And he was like, I get it. And it's just like, you're trying to get through it, you're trying to find the one. It's I was like, yeah, I hate it so much, thank you.
Yeah.
it was a funny interaction. So I am excited to go back. I'm probably gonna go see the Cherry Blossoms this weekend, the day this airs, so yay.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. That's my update.
Nice.
Got anything else?
No, I'm ready. I can't say like let's get into it as if we haven't just been chatting for a while. So I do want to give a trigger warning for the general, like the next, you know, the next few episodes of this deep dive. We are going to be discussing eating disorders, childhood trauma, self-harm, suicidal ideation and attempts, pretty contentious divorces, and like quite a few other things. We're going to be discussing Princess Diana and her entire life. It gets into a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So I wanted to give a heads up on that now. This episode is strictly her early life. We don't get into her marriage or her eating disorder quite yet, but just a general trigger warning for the entire Princess Diana series.
Good to know. Thank you for that.
Yes, of course. I read one book, finished it, Diana, Her True Story in Her Own Words. This is the only book about her that she was involved in. And that's something that we will discuss in great detail when we get to that part of the timeline in Diana's life. It's written by Andrew Morton. I am just now in the process of reading Tina Brown's 2007 Diana Chronicles. And I know that that's going to bring in a lot of stuff that I'm sure I'll try and pack in the later episodes. It just became available at my library, which is why it took so long. Please join our Patreon if you would like to help us be able to purchase these books so that we don't have to wait the library.
Although we do love our libraries.
Love our local libraries. That's not going to stop. It'd be nice to be able to
have it immediately
when we need it for the research. I do have a couple of quotes pulled from National Geographic's documentary Diana in her own words that you can watch on their YouTube channel for free. It's like an hour and a half long. And it is pulled from the interview tapes that were made for Diana, Her True Story, and just like a lot of other interviews that she gave. Some other sources include HBO's Diana, Our Mother, Her Life and Legacy from 2017, HBO's The Princess from 2022, and BBC's Diana 7 Days. There's a bunch of other documentaries that I watched. Most of those were for later episodes about her death. Regardless, all of them will be, like, all of the same sources are going to be listed in all of the show notes. There's just so much about her, podcasts and all of this stuff that, like, you can only say it so many ways. This has been talked about so much, so I don't want to, like, just feel like I'm reading the, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it feels like I'm just, like, regurgitating other information that I saw because it's so talked about. Mm-hmm. The other thing I do want to be, I guess, upfront about is that, like, as much as I dislike King Charles as a person, I think covering this entire story while I'm in a program to become, like, a therapist or, like, a counselor has offered a really different perspective than I would have had I done this previously.
Okay.
Charles is not an awesome person. Like, he's not great. And he fully is the product of his environment, like a true representation of what, like, a real life person who's raised to be a prince would be. Mm-hmm. But I also, this quote, I think, from the Atlantic article, January 13th, 2023, kind of sums up how I feel about it. They talk about how Harry even referenced the late author Hilary Mantel's famous comparison of the royal family to pandas. Two threatened species, both ill-suited for the modern world and kept in airy enclosures that are really cages. Whoa. I can't even fucking imagine what it's like growing up in the royal family. And I do get into Charles' life. Doesn't sound fucking great. And I can't even imagine what it's like, what it's like to be, like, a little kid whose family is, like, literal royalty and you know one day you're gonna be a king. What the fuck does that mean? Like, what a weird environment to be made in.
It's not normal.
It's not normal at all. So I don't want to sound like, oh, poor little rich boy who's going to be king. Kind of, you know, Charles apologist by any means. But the trope of, like, wealthy person finds average Joe who looks just like them and then they switch places has, like, existed among writers for centuries for a fucking reason. We all, like, it's, of course, they're so rich, they don't have as, like, the real big problems, but, like, you know, there's a lot to this. I am presenting this a little bit of, like, I don't want to say unbiased as much as I try to be. It's definitely not. I mean, did you hear how I just said King Charles earlier? But this isn't just going to be, like, hardcore Charles hate. If that's what you're looking for,
yeah,
that's not what I'm going to be presenting, yeah. I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I completely understand what you're saying, and I totally see the point, especially with the career path that you have chosen and the schooling that you're doing. Taking a look at the effects of the mental health of people who are born into a cycle like that is fucking nuts. Like, it should be looked into. What a weird thing to grow up in.
Yeah.
The expectations that are put on you, the stress of those expectations. I mean, sure, it's great you're rich, but that rich doesn't mean shit for people's mental health and trauma that they experience.
Exactly. The environment kids are raised in matters. So this episode, we're really going to be discussing the environments that Diana, Lady of Wales, grew up in, as well as the one that Prince Charles came from the one that Diana would marry into eventually. I didn't know a ton about Princess Diana going into this. I had like a base understanding as well as, you know, all of the conspiracies and stuff. But I know that you love her. So I'm hoping that these episodes are more of a conversation.
All right.
Than some of my past ones have been.
Do you ever feel like you can watch as many biographies and things and documentaries about people, but if you haven't in a while, you like kind of forget the details until you start getting into a conversation about it again, and then it all comes flooding back? Like, I feel like that's...
Yes.
Once you start talking, although I will say, I think I've seen more about really her life with the royals and her subsequent, I'm calling it, a murder.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But that's, I think, what I've seen most of. So I'm actually really interested to get into conversation and learn more about her early years, because I don't think that I actually have really consumed much information about that.
That is exactly why I wanted to do this, because as someone who, you know, wasn't super invested into the royals, I knew nothing about her childhood. First, let's talk about the Spencers. Diana's mom, Frances, was, quote, at 18, the rich, aristocratic Frances was one of the youngest brides ever to walk up the aisle at Westminster Abbey when she married the 30-year-old heir to Althorp, John Spencer. End quote.
Oh my
gosh.
From
Tina Brown's The Diana Chronicles. That is a 12-year age difference for those who don't feel like doing the math.
Yeah, it's weird.
Queen Elizabeth II was in attendance, per the BBC. The wedding was considered, quote, the social event of 1954.
Wow.
According to that same report. So this was a big deal.
A big to-do.
A big to-do. She came from a really wealthy family, and he came from, like, a long line of earls and would one day be the heir to Althorp. The titles just are so silly.
What the fuck is an earl?
I honestly don't know. And I didn't necessarily look into the American comparison.
In modern Britain, an earl is a member of the peerage, ranking below a marquess and above a viscount. This gives me nothing, and I actually hate it so much more. It's all made up.
It's all made up. It meant something then. It's a big deal. I believe there's still, like, Earl Spencer is Diana's brother right now.
Okay.
And he lives right now in this familial home.
Okay.
And it's also the site of Princess Diana's grave.
Okay. Ooh.
So it's interesting because John Spencer's family actually didn't have a lot of money.
Oh.
But Frances, her family, had a lot of money.
Ah.
So the marriage was pretty beneficial in that way.
I'd say so.
Tina Brown, writer of the Diana Chronicles, goes on to describe John Spencer as, quote, alas, behind his impeccable manners and affable veneer, Johnny turned out to be a bully, patriarchal personality who became abusive after a few drinks, end quote.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That is not good. Fuck.
It's not. According to the BBC, Spencer worked as a royal equerry? Not sure. Some sort of
horse thing? Is it a horse thing?
I don't think so.
Can you spell it for me?
EQUERRY.
An officer of the British royal household who attends or assists members of the royal family.
Okay. So he's that.
Oh, wait, hold on. Historical. An officer of the household of a prince or noble who had charge over the stables.
Okay. So that's where the word comes from.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting.
He worked for both King George and young Queen Elizabeth and rented a home on the Queen's estate in Sandringham when his children were young. The family, it was called Park House, and the family lived there where Diana was born in 1961. Their first two children, Jane and Sarah, were born without issue. And roughly a year before Diana was born, her parents gave birth to a boy, the son, the heir, that they always wanted, only for him to pass within a few hours of being born.
No.
As if the immediate loss of a newborn wasn't shitty enough, the whole situation was handled horribly. Tina Brown has this account written, quote, "One of the bitterest moments of Frances's life was when her husband refused to let her see the baby son who had died shortly after birth. She struggled from the bed and banged frantically on the locked door of the nursery to which he had been snatched away. My baby was taken from me and I never saw his face, not in life, not in death. No one ever mentioned what had happened," she recalled later. It was not for many years that Frances saw the baby's death certificate with the entry extensive malformation. Not a healthy relationship, not in a good mental place whatsoever. And like that, like Diana's born July 1st.
Yeah.
And that was January of the year prior. So like very quickly after her mom gets pregnant with Diana. She's a Cancer. And according to astrocharts.com, she was born at 7:45 p.m. And they rate their birth time accuracy as excellent, making her an Aquarius moon and a Sagittarius rising, because I know you're curious.
Oh, hell yes. She definitely has Aquarius in her big three.
Oh, for sure.
100%.
Sure. All her parents wanted was a boy, the classic we need an heir nonsense. They were not happy when Diana was born a girl. She's not named for a little while, like at least a few days, because they hadn't even considered girl's name, basically attempting to like manifest a boy into existence, and it didn't work for Diana, clearly. So I think there were like some sources that said she wasn't named for like a week. Not a loving welcoming into this world. Her little brother Charles is born 3 years later, so they finally get their heir. He's who I mentioned beforehand. Oprah Daily quotes one of Diana's old nannies, Mary Clark, who weighed in with her opinion. "Diana had a happy, secure childhood. From the moment I met her and worked with the family, I saw she was helpful, laughing, exuberant, loved by both her parents and the apple of her father's eye," Clark wrote. Current Earl Spencer, Diana's brother, disagrees with that picture. No, where did the quote go? Okay, well, I had a quote there, and then there's another part of it later. I don't know where that went. He was like, no, that was not the case. Their parents had a nasty and brutal divorce. Frances, at 28, married Johnny, who again is described as a bully with a patriarchal personality who became abusive after a few drinks, is not happy. And a lot of sources say, like, she abruptly left her husband for another man, but she had an affair with Peter Shand Kidd, an Australian wallpaper tycoon. Just interesting. And Frances most likely took a little while to, like, work up the courage to leave her husband, who, again, by all accounts, was abusive. Quote, "The five-year-old Diana used to listen behind the door of the drawing room to the sounds of Rose so violent that her sister Sarah had to turn up the gramophone to drown them out," Tina Brown writes.
God.
She's leaving, and she gets a lot of shit for it. And I feel like this is really obvious, but of course a custody battle ensues. And the thing is like, in high society, you don't have an affair and then leave your marital obligations. You just, like, have the affair and, like, you know, keep doing your thing in public. John was the Earl of Spencer, soon to be Earl Spencer, when the title was passed after his grandfather died. Very messy. You know, the royal family is not about messy. Any part of it, even the Earls. So the nail in the coffin was when Frances's mother, who was more focused on her position at court and her title and, you know, her proximity to Queen Mother than she was on her daughter and her grandchildren. And this became super clear when she testified against Frances at the custody hearing. Lady Ruth Fermoy chose to brand Frances as a bolter rather than go up against as embedded an establishment figure as Johnny Spencer. She basically said that Frances is a bad mother. She left her kids for this guy and, you know, moved to London, which she did, but she didn't leave her kids. Like, she was very much so planning on having her kids with her. Sole custody is granted to John. Sarah and Jane are sent to boarding school, and Diana and Charlie live with their dad. Living with, like, Daddy Earl of Spencer is not awesome. In fact, it results in, this is the second part of the quote, what her brother called an unhappy childhood. And to say that out loud means that it was fucking horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's how he that's him painting it well. According to her brother, Diana felt abandoned by their mother. When she was packing up her stuff to leave, she promised Diana that she'd come back to see her. And Diana used to wait at the doorsteps for her, but she never came. Oh, Charles, Diana's brother, told the Sunday Times. Tina Brown's book paints a much more complicated and devastating picture where Frances is actually like shut out of the children's lives completely.
I'm not surprised.
With at one point the doors of Park House literally being shut in her face.
Oh my God. The fact that Diana, because of the way she perceived things as a child whose brain is not fully developed, thought that her mother abandoned her and her mom was actually trying to see her. That's just so devastating.
There's this really sad quote where Frances was like, Park House was so big too, so the children couldn't hear me like calling their names as I banged on the door.
God.
Which is just so, so sad. That being said, when they did get time together, because they did, you know, he didn't like completely not allow to see their parents. They would get like weekends and stuff with her. Frances would frequently cry for like a lot of their time together. Just being like, oh, I don't want you to leave. Like, your dad is taking you away from me. It's really unhealthy. Crying at your children about how sad you are that they're leaving. Like, that's a lot of emotional baggage to be putting on your little kids.
It's a lot of labor to put on children.
Yeah. And Diana, like, talked about that frequently. Like, that really stuck with her. Sort of this notion of like, I have to take care of everyone and do what they need me to do. Charles was only 2 when his parents got divorced, not Prince, Diana's brother, and said frequently that Diana was like a mother figure to him. She, quote, was the big sister who mothered me as a baby and endured those long train journeys between our parents' homes with me at weekends, end quote. Because their mom lived in London, and they lived like off in their royal, you know, estate. Their special fancy estate. Yeah. That truly is like the middle of nowhere, kind of.
A lot of them are like that.
Not like a fun place
to
live. Many sources highlighted this effect that is apparently well known to kind of, you know, paint a picture of what it was like living in this house where Charles Spencer like wasn't allowed to eat dinner with his father until he was 7. Diana and Charles would have to eat in the nursery, like that's the kids' area. And then when he was 7, Charles was like allowed to sit with Papa at the grown-up table.
You were man enough at 7 years old to sit at the table with Daddy.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, the royals, like, don't let their little boys wear pants at a certain age until they, like, reach a certain age. Like, they're always wearing shorts. Like, there are all of these, like, wild fucking rules and weird customs that create, like, a huge separation between the kids and their parents. And it's very odd. So male children must wear shorts rather than pants until they're of a certain age. They're, like, not allowed to meet with foreign leaders, certainly. They have to learn a second language. They undergo formal etiquette training.
I'm cool with the second language. I think everyone should know a second language. I'm impressed by people who know a second language.
Most gifts aren't allowed to be kept.
What?
If, like, strangers, like, they, people can't give him gifts because it could be, like, considered, like, a bribe.
Oh.
Which is the same for like our president and stuff. Like there's like rules about
value.
Yeah.
That's crazy. What do you do at Christmas time and people's birthdays?
So I'm looking at the Independent article and it specifically references, this means it's unlikely that Prince George was allowed to keep any of the 774 presents he was gifted in 2014 alone, which includes hundreds of clothing items as well as his games and toys. If the gift is small, such as a bouquet of flowers, it's most likely the royal recipient will be allowed to keep it. I mean, I'm assuming they donate it.
They must. So you can't get a birthday present?
Not from, like, a stranger. Like, I know, I'm sure your parents can. everyone gets weighed before and after Christmas dinner in the royal family. Like, there's all these, like, weird fucking things. What? Man. That's from CBS News. Black should only be worn at funerals. That's going to come up again. Nude pantyhose should be worn to formal events.
I mean, I love a pantyhose, so.
But you have to wear them. Women also have to wear hats to formal events. Mm,
I do know that.
Tiaras are reserved for after 6 p.m. unless you're getting married. Like, there's all of these wild rules. And one of the ones that the Spencers really followed was, like, the separation of, like, where the kids eat, where the grown-ups eat, and, like, all these weird forms of etiquette. So that means that after this, like, horrible custody battle, this is, like, the life that they're living. And then at 9 years old, Diana is also sent to boarding school, an all-girls boarding school called Riddlesworth.
Riddlesworth?
Riddlesworth?
Oh, we can relate.
Yeah. After 3 years, she goes on to attend West Heath Boarding School for Girls, which to this day has a plaque in her honor. Mm-hmm. And it's during this period, like, while she's in boarding school, that she does, like, have a really solid and stable life at school and is, like, getting active in dance and, like, for the first time she, like, experiences the opportunity to consistently partake in, like, charitable events and, like, volunteering.
Oh, cool.
That, as we know, becomes, like, a huge part of her life. While all of that is stable, her home life is, like, fucking wild. At 14, an abrupt change happens when her grandfather passes, making her father the 8th Earl Spencer and heir to the family's home, where they then have to move into said mansion, which has belonged to the Spencer family for over 500 years.
Wow.
Since Sir John Spencer purchased it in 1508. Yeah. 1508. And it's fucking massive. It's like one of those places that people tour.
Yeah.
And that we'll come into that in a second. But this was, like, not a place that they had, like, an emotional connection to by any means.
Yeah.
They rarely visited the big house when the old Earl was alive.
Yeah.
And they weren't super invested in that part of their heritage. So it was just sort of another abrupt change to her already really unstable life. And her parents are continuing to use the children as pawns. I mean, classic divorce parent shit. I can relate. And unfortunately, the next 3 years of her life are just filled with so much consistent change. John Spencer marries Rain, his new second wife, in 1976. And the children find out about the marriage because they read it in the paper.
Stop. Were they both at school?
Yes.
Oh my
God. Well, all of them, because they have Sarah and Jane as well.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Yes.
Everyone is in school.
I forgot because they got shipped off before.
There's, like, a big party thrown at Althorpe Mansion and the children aren't invited.
Wild. There's such a disconnect.
So as you can imagine, they did not like Daddy's new wife, Rain. And they would often refer to her as Acid Rain and taunt her by singing the song Rain, Rain, Go Away.
Wow.
But never finishing it with Come Back Another Day, just Rain, Rain, Go Away. And, like, that's it.
Yo, that's petty as fuck.
It's legendary. Acid Rain? Acid, are you fucking rain. Amazing. Amazing. Wow. Fucking zinger.
I want to know which one of Love them it. Came up with that.
Diana. For fucking sure it was Diana. 2 years into the marriage, Diana's father suffers from a severe stroke that keeps him hospitalized for a while. And during this time, Rain becomes, quote, very territorial,
ew,
end quote, about the recovery. And doesn't allow the children to visit him in the hospital, which, as you can imagine, only worsens the relationship between Diana and her stepmother. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, they never become chill. We will get into sort of a culmination of their tension later in life. Rain never had a chance. The way that they were brought into it, reading about it in the paper, never had a chance. She never had a chance. They never fucking considered the kids, which is just wild. Like, this is like the stepmom and parent trap.
Oh. Mm.
Just, like, so, like, so bad. Like written to be horrible.
Written to be the worst.
It's fucking wild. It's really unsurprising with all of this going on at home. Because, you know, when she goes to, like, see her mom's just, like, crying most of the time. And everyone's kind of, like, ostracizing her mom because she had an affair and she left for another man and, you know, messy, like I said. Unsurprising with everything. Diana failed her O-level exams. English shit twice. A lot of people love to be like, oh, Diana wasn't good at school, but it sounds like she was a fucking teenager who had a lot of crazy shit going on,
right? Like, could you focus on your studies with that?
No.
Could you take a test while you're that fucking stressed out? I don't think so.
I'm also bad at taking tests.
Oh, I hate taking tests.
And I doubt that she was like, yes, hello, life is hard. Can I have some time? Like, she ends up dropping out of boarding school entirely at the age of 16. And afterwards, she goes to an institute of Swiss finishing school, an institute for women in Switzerland. Swiss, obviously. I wrote that sentence really weird and I had to think about how to fix that on the fly. Her older sister, Sarah, like, also attended it. It's known for its, like, wealthy students and teaching them how to be ladies and whatnot. She did not like it there and did not feel comfortable there. But it was her first time where she, like, really got out of the country and, like, on an airplane. National Geographic special noted that it was exciting for her to kind of, like, get out and see the world, but she did not like this school within itself, and she ends up leaving after a few weeks. She goes on a vacation, like a holiday.
How old is she at holiday. This point?
She's like 17, 18.
Okay, okay. Oh, money. Money. Money will do things for you.
Yes, money. So much money. She has a lot of money. She's on a holiday with her friends skiing, and she ends up hurting her ankle.
Ooh, that sucks. I know what that's like.
A few of her friends know this guy, James Colthurst, who was trained to become a doctor. So they're like, James, like, please come look at her ankle. And they just became such good friends.
Oh.
Nothing romantic between them.
Okay.
He ended up marrying another woman, having kids, happily ever after. But they were very good friends for the rest of Diana's life. In a piece for The Telegraph, Colthurst said, quote, good fun, bright and mischievous. It was hard to not hit it off with Diana straight away. And so began the friendship she and I maintained for the rest of her short, eventful life. End quote.
Mischievous.
We will get into that in the next episode, but she was so fucking funny.
I love that.
And so, like, so mischievous is like the perfect word for her. I love her. I really fell in love with her. It's also around this time where she, 16, 17, meets Prince Charles, 29, for the first time, who was then dating her older sister, Sarah, age 22, 23. Did you know about that?
I remember that.
Okay. I had no idea.
It was definitely in some documentary that I saw, but I'm still, I think I'm the thing that I'm shocked about right now is those age differences.
Oh, yeah. Now that Prince Charles has entered the picture, we're going to pause and kind of look at his upbringing, which was not any better.
It's definitely got to be a lot loftier.
Yes. Time says, quote, Prince Philip saw it as his responsibility to toughen up his son and prepare him for the rigors of one day becoming king. As his cousin, Lady Mountbatten, said, the prince could see that Charles was a terribly sensitive boy who was going to come up against a lot of problems. I'm sure he just wanted to help make his character more robust, but in retrospect, I think he overdid it sometimes and perhaps he was a bit untactful. End quote.
A bit untactful.
A bit untactful. That's putting it nicely. Royal biographer Sally Bedell Smith notes in Prince Charles, The Passions and Paradoxes of an Improbable Life, wordy title for a very boring man, Charles was often belittled by his father's forceful personality.
Mm.
This is constantly reiterated throughout Prince Charles's life, that you're a weak little bitch, you're too soft, and like, that's why daddy is mean to you.
Oh my god.
Everyone fucking talks about it. Like,
the fact that it's so well known.
And no one, like, talks about, like, what it must have been like to grow up with everyone fucking talking about that.
like the negativity that you were just surrounded by. That's very destructive to someone's psyche.
Yeah. At school, kid had no friends because anyone who was seen as like trying to be his friend was looked at as like sucking up to the future king. So being nice to him got other kids bullied.
Oh, come on.
Which might actually have been the reason, now that I think about it, that he was the first heir to the throne of Britain to go to a school. He briefly attended a small pre-preparatory, Hill House, in Knightsbridge, London. Then he attended, before going as a boarder, to his father's old prep school in Scotland.
Okay.
And I like, it might have been for that reason, because like little kings don't know how to socialize with other children. But like, whose fucking fault is that?
Yeah. It's not his.
You guys have all the resources in the fucking world. Couldn't fix that fucking problem. The rugged regime of his old school was something that Prince Philip adored, writing, quote, "Children may be indulged at home, but school is expected to be a Spartan and disciplined experience in the process of developing into self-controlled, considerate, and independent adults," end quote.
Robots. You want robots.
Yikes. A Spartan disciplined experience.
Like, what?
Yikes. Fucking yikes. Charles absolutely hated his time there and describes it in public as a hellhole. So, you know, it was fucking horrible.
Oh my God.
As I said, he was mercilessly bullied. And neither the Queen nor Prince Philip encouraged Charles to talk to them in any way about his feelings or anything at all, which then led him to bottle it up and avoid any sort of awkward conversations. Hmm. The royal family does not like mess.
No, no, they don't. And why would they want him to talk about his feelings? That would make him seem weaker in their mind.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God.
It was written that Prince Philip often gave Charles the impression that he was not the sort of son that he had wanted and could fly into a rage at random aspects of his behavior, once rebuking him for reading in bed. If he wants to sleep, then sleep. If he wants to read, why doesn't he sit in a chair and read?
End what quote. What a thing to get upset by. That's so irrational.
Mm-hmm. It's super fucking weird. And then his mom, the queen, I can't remember where this was talked about, but there was one time where like the queen came home from traveling and like went, you know, to greet little Charles after her travels. And she just like shakes his little 5-year-old hand.
His mom. Oh my God.
If we were in TV world, this is how you would make a serial killer.
Yes. Yes, it would be. There's no love here. I bet there was never any skin-to-skin contact.
No.
And that's like so important.
I bet mommy never held him.
Being held as a baby is so fucking important. There are studies on that shit.
Yes, there are, Ashley. There are so fucking many.
Oh my God. And this is why that disclaimer at the beginning, talking about this and what he experienced as a child, is so important to understand why people are the way that they are.
Exactly. He is frequently referred to as not athletic enough to be a sportsman, does have a love for polo. So by the mid to late 60s, he's competing in polo matches just like his papa.
Papa.
He doesn't call him papa. I just feel like he would. I did not read that fucking anywhere. I bet you he calls him sir.
What if he made what if he made him call him your majesty?
Oh my God. Probably. Actually, you know, you're so right. He does. You're so fucking right, Your Majesty. Your Majesty, Papa. King Papa. In 1970, at a polo match in Windsor, 22-year-old Charles meets Camilla Shand for the first time, and the couple enjoys a whirlwind romance until Charles departs for the Royal Navy in 1971. Camilla does not wait for him and, you know, solidifies her relationship, marrying the man that she had been on again, off again for 6 years, Andrew Parker Bowles, Camilla's Camilla Parker Bowles. Charles is devastated when he finds out. Many sources say that he cried because he's a sensitive boy, as we know. So this brings us to the mid-70s, where he is dating Lady Sarah Spencer, Diana's older sister. And in November of 1977, he comes to their home. Mm. He comes to their home to, like, hang out with Sarah, and she's just, like, 16 years old. She truly is just, like, your average 16-year-old girl. Like, I always imagined that she was just, like, beautiful, stunning Princess Diana. But she just, like, your average funny kid who was just, like, cracking jokes during the hunt. And, her, like, by doing so, her and Charles chatted a little bit. Enough that he, like, remembered her from that moment. But then they part ways. Mm. And they don't end up meeting again for another few years. At 18, Diana moves to London with a few of her friends into a flat that her parents bought for her. Mm. Continues doing her charity work and has, like, various jobs throughout London. Is just, like, living with her friends in the city, just, like, having fun. There are interviews of her friends talking about, like, pulling pranks on each other and, like, the, like, sappy, like, love shows that they used to watch together. And by all accounts, this was, like, genuinely the best time of Diana's life.
I love that.
Living in London. Sarah and Charles are meeting from time to time. And one day when Sarah is chatting with the press, because it's, like, you know, been out that her and Prince Charles are meeting in public, she is talking with them just, like, a little bit too casually. Says something along the lines of, like, I don't know Charles well enough to marry him. We, like, just started meeting each other, and I could never marry someone who I don't know. It doesn't matter if he's the future king of England or if he's, like, a trash collector. I need to know the person that I'm marrying.
Yeah.
Which is a totally normal thing to say.
Absolutely.
But what the press hear is that she wouldn't marry King Charles, even if he were the king or a trash collector. That sound bite, that clip, that's too much opening up to the press. And that ends their connection. They're done.
She said too much.
She said too much.
And she barely said anything at all.
She barely said anything.
Oh my God. They're so dramatic.
That's all it takes.
Yeah.
Really.
They're so private. It's actually insane.
Truly. And they're very in control of their narrative. Mm-hmm. They're putting out this idea that, like, Charles is this, like, suave playboy and that there's, like, a hush fund that his uncle has to, like, pay the girls off to keep them quiet. And there are a lot of people who are like, no, that is rumors that the royal people are starting themselves to, like, make him look, like, more desirable, basically, which is hilarious. Look, even if someone looked like that, it'd be fine, but they have to have a personality.
You just suck.
Like, yeah, he fucking sucks. So it's in 1980 when Diana and Charles are invited to a friend's house in Sussex. And this is a quote. He had just broken up with his girlfriend, and his friend Mountbatten had just been killed, and I said it'd be nice to see him. Diana said later to her speech coach in a tape used in the documentary Diana in Her Own Words, "We are talking about Mountbatten and his girlfriend, and I said, you must be so lonely. It was so sad watching you walking up the aisle with Mountbatten's coffin in front, ghastly. You need someone beside you." And after that, he was all over me for the rest of the evening, following me around like a puppy. Diana truly showed 1 ounce of consideration for his emotions. And he was like, oh my God, amazing. That is where today's episode ends, with Diana and Charles just having met.
Ooh.
Officially.
Yeah. Oh my God, not him latching on. Mm-hmm. Oh, you need therapy so badly. Emotional damage.
So badly.
Wow, Katie. I truly did not know the majority of that information, so thank you.
Of course. Of course. I mean, there's so much going on. So the next episode is going to be the start of their relationship and the marriage. And maybe the divorce. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see how long it takes.
We'll see. Because there's a lot. There's so much that happens, especially when Diana really reclaims her voice. So we'll see what happens. But I hope that y'all enjoyed this.
I know I did.
And I hope that you're ready for a deep dive.
I know I am. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.